Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Israel reacts with fury as the United Nations Security Council votes for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The US abstained and didn't use its veto. What does the resolution mean for the Palestinians, Israel and its allies? I am Hashim Ahlbarra, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze and help define major global stories. Let's bring in our panel in the Jordanian capital, Amman. Diana Bhutto is a Palestinian lawyer, legal analyst and former advisor to the Palestine Liberation Organization in Stockholm, in Sweden. Gideon Levy is columnist for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. He's also an author and winner of the Euromed Journalist Prize. And Chris Hedges is in New York. He is a former Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times, a Pulitzer Prize winner and author of War is the Greatest Evil. Welcome to the program. Diana, I'm interested in knowing what is happening in the Palestinian occupied territories. What's the feeling there? Do they see the resolution as a breakthrough or just a symbolic victory?
It's both. Look, it's important to keep in mind that there has been nothing has been able to stop Israel for this near 6 months of attack on the Gaza Strip. And so there was an immediate sense of relief that perhaps finally Israel will stop the attack. But then also a feeling that given that nobody's been able to stop Israel over the course of the past near 6 months, that what's to say that they're going to stop now? And given the Israeli statements and given the American statements, it seems to be for many people that this is really quite symbolic, and that's it. People are looking for Israel to stop. This genocide must stop, and it should have stopped a long time ago.
Gideon, how has it been seen in Israel?
It depends by whom, as usual, but the question is what will follow this resolution, and mainly what will follow the decision of the American administration not to put a veto on the resolution. If it's only one case, then nothing will change. But there is a greater concern that the United States is changing its policy toward Israel. Many are scared of it. I'm quite hopeful because of it. And time will show if it's just a one case or it's a beginning of a very interesting process, which might end also in a very dramatic way.
Chris, could it signal a shift in the American position when it comes to the war in Gaza, or just one of those moments?
I don't think it's a shift. I think it's about optics. Biden is in serious political trouble. His base has deserted him, especially younger voters. The genocide, the live-streamed genocide doesn't play well domestically. It doesn't play well internationally. It's clear the Biden administration is impotent in terms of being able to curb the excesses of the Israeli government, whether that's the cutting of humanitarian aid. Last month, February, aid shipments were down by 44%, the starvation in particular in northern Gaza, and then the pending assault on Rafah. So by essentially abstaining, by not blocking the ceasefire, it is a way by the United States or by the Biden administration to distance themselves from what they know is coming, because it's going to be even worse than what we've seen, as horrific as it already is. So in terms of the only way to stop the genocide is to halt the arms shipments, which are now massive. Israel has depleted its stocks, and I don't see that happening.
Diana, 6 months into the relentless bombardment, the killing of innocent civilians, the mass destruction of homes, schools, and hospitals, do the Palestinians believe that this is something that could finally make a difference?
Yes, it can make a difference. But the question is, who is going to stop Israel? Look, it's important to keep in mind that what has been happening has been not only, as Chris said, live streamed, but this is the most documented place on earth. And we know what Israel wants to do. They've made it absolutely clear that they intend to carry out a genocide, and they have. They've made it clear that they're going to ethnically cleanse the Gaza Strip, and they are. And so people are looking for any glimmer of hope that something will be done to stop this monster that is called Israel. And instead of stopping it, we see that the United States is serving as its cheerleader. As Chris already mentioned, they didn't abstain at the UN, but more importantly, they've already certified that more weapons are going to be coming to Israel, and that these weapons are used correctly when we know that they're being used to completely decimate the Gaza Strip, to carry out a genocide, to starve Palestinians, to destroy the place entirely. So the real issue is whether this is going to have teeth. And I know that the United States is not going to do anything, but the world doesn't consist of just the United States. And this is where it's become so important for every other nation around the world to act and to make sure that this genocide doesn't continue to be perpetrated in their names.
Gideon, the initial plan before the resolution was basically Netanyahu hoping to send his top aides, Minister of Strategic Affairs Ron Dermer and National Security Council head Tzachi Hanegbi, to talk to the Americans about the potential for a ground military operation in Rafah. Now that has been shelved because of the resolution, but instead the Americans are still going to listen to the Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant. Is this the moment that Netanyahu has always feared most, which is basically being slapped in a way or another by the Americans, snubbed?
Look, we shouldn't over-exaggerate what's going on, because until now it's really only about talkings and all kind of rituals. Netanyahu is playing along the lines of his campaign to survive in power in Israel domestically. He wants to be seen as the guy who stands courageously in front of the Americans and put borders to their restrictions over him. And the cancellation of those talks, I wouldn't exaggerate about their significance. What is much more significant, I think, is the fact that we are in a deadlock again in the talks with Hamas over a pause and exchange of prisoners. This should worry us much more, because a deadlock can lead us to many places. And above all, we should put attention more to measures and acts and less to talkings. America is until now only talking, and so does the world.
Mm-hmm. Chris, by abstaining to pave the way for the resolution to be adopted, was the Biden administration genuinely concerned about what happens next in Gaza, or just mainly concerned about the next elections?
No, they're concerned about being an international pariah along with Israel. They're certainly very concerned about the domestic blowback. If they were concerned about the Palestinians, they would not have cut funding to UNRWA, and they were the major funder of UNRWA, and they would curtail the arms shipments, which are massive. I think 68%, if I have that right, of the munitions that Israel uses are now shipped in from the United States. So this is a game the Biden administration has been playing for 6 months. I've covered many conflicts. I spent 20 years abroad as a foreign correspondent. And you usually call for a ceasefire immediately, not 6 months afterwards. You try and establish a ceasefire so that the warring parties can begin to create diplomatic options rather than killing each other. No, the Biden administration is a full partner in the Israeli genocide. Without question, it knows very well what Israel is doing and is going to do. The mass starvation looms in Gaza, and I think they want to put distance between themselves and the nightmare that the world is about to watch. But it's a rhetorical distance. It's not a real distance. The only country that is responding in any real way is Yemen. And then, of course, we have seen the UAE, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan create a land corridor to make sure Israel gets its consumer goods and vacuum cleaners and vegetables and everything else. So it's not just the United States that is complicit. It's essentially most of the world community, whatever their rhetorical statements are. Only Yemen is that's the only country that's essentially attempting to interfere in this genocide.
Diana, what would be the way ahead for the Palestinians when it comes to the enforcing of the resolution? You know, the Americans said it's non-binding. Everybody knows that. Well, ultimately, the Israelis have neglected many of the resolutions in the past. Do the Palestinians have only one way out, which is basically pursue a legal path to ensure that this is going to be implemented, particularly when it comes to the implementation of the ceasefire?
Look, I want to touch upon this issue of whether it is binding or not binding. And this is where the United States makes a mockery out of the institutions that it claims to say that it abides by. Every UN Security Council resolution is binding. There isn't such a thing as a non-binding Security Council resolution. The way that the United States is interpreting it is that they're not going to do anything to make sure that it is enforced. That's very different than it being binding or non-binding. And so once again, the question becomes, who is going to put into place that enforcement mechanism? We as Palestinians, we don't have that. You know, we don't have the ability to do so. We're not a state, we're under siege, we've been blockaded, we're living under military occupation, you name it, refugees, you name it. But that doesn't mean that other people are so confined. And this is why it's so important, the growing boycott, divestment, sanctions movement has been growing for a reason. There are reasons that you're seeing millions of people taking to the streets around the world because they feel and they know that nobody's doing anything to stop this genocide. And so the matter is, rather than the United States pretending that it's somehow not binding when it is, instead, they should be focusing on making sure that those institutions are actually upheld and respected instead of getting everybody else around the world to be forced to uphold international law or to be forced to stop this genocide. This is where you see a failure in the international system. If there is to be an international system, then what we should be seeing is that countries like Israel, which is a pariah, rogue state, should be held to account rather than being coddled along the way, as it has by the United States and by other European nations as well.
Gideon, the ICJ in its provisional measures was cautioning against any breach of the measures, asking the Israelis to implement a ceasefire and to look for, asking the Israelis in particular to make sure that they're not taking any measure that is going to pose serious threats to the Palestinians. With this new resolution, the legal consequences, is it anything that the Israeli government, you think, will be thinking about in the upcoming days?
I doubt it very much, because again and again, I repeat myself, as long as it's not followed by measures, by real actions and steps, which would punish Israel or Israelis or make them pay a price for what's going on. As long as it's not about this, Israel will continue with its own policy, ignoring the resolutions of international institutions. It does so for decades. It's not new. The real question is, would the international community now move from condemnations and advices and threats into measures and actions and even this forbidden word, sanctions? If this will not happen, you will see more of the same. Israel will continue with the war as much as it feels that it's necessary for its own interest. And the world will continue to vote for all kinds of resolutions against Israel, and Israel will ignore it.
Chris, there was a haggle over semantics over the last few days about the draft of the resolution, and the Chinese and the Russians vetoed a draft resolution by the Americans, saying that it was giving green light to the Israelis to launch their ground operation in Rafah. Was the Russian-Chinese veto the trigger that prompted the Americans to say, you know what, this could be the moment for us to reconcile?
I can't answer that because I'm not at the UN reporting. I think the Russians and the Chinese were right. I just want to go back to that issue of mm-hmm. law. You know, the ICJ is not going to rule for a very long time, but domestically, the shipping of arms, weapons supplies to Israel violates five different laws in the United States: the Foreign Assistance Act, the Arms Export Control Act, the U.S. War Crimes Act, the Leahy Law, and the Genocide Convention Implementation Act. So there's an egregious violation of domestic law, not only international law, in order to continue. As immediately when the ceasefire resolution was passed, the United States, essentially Kirby and others, called it non-binding, i.e., Israel doesn't have to abide by it, and there will be no enforcement mechanism, and we're not responsible for ensuring that Israel abides by it.
Gianna, if the Israelis decide to go in Rafah, would it completely undermine this resolution?
Yes, of course. If they continue to bomb, as they have, then it undermines the resolution. But that's the point. Israel has always viewed itself as being immune, as being above the law. And it's always viewed that Palestinians are beneath it, that Palestinians are not and in any way supposed to be afforded their rights. This is where, and you know, Gideon has said this now a couple of times, and I want to pick up on it. This is where it becomes so important for sanctions to be applied against Israel. When you live in Israel, you see what it's like there. It's a country that is full on genocidal now. They're either ignoring the genocide or they're cheering it on. There are very few who are absolutely appalled by what Israel's doing, and very few that are doing anything to stop it. And it's only when Israel actually feels the force of the world community through the form of sanctions or by being ostracized, whether it's not being allowed to be at Eurovision, for example, or the Olympics or any of these events, that's when you'll begin to see a shift. I'm not so sure the shift will happen inside Israel immediately, but there will be a shift where they're going to have to reckon with their genocidal nature. But to answer your question, of course, any action that Israel's doing, as it has done today, is undermining the ceasefire resolution. And here's where Netanyahu wants to show that he is not only boss and that he is the person who sends orders to the United States, but that he can continue to defy the world and do whatever it is that he wants.
Gideon, at the same time, there's another parallel path, which is the behind closed door talks to bring about a settlement and narrow the differences between Hamas and Israel. Do you see the potential for an imminent deal?
No, I don't see a potential for an imminent deal. I see a potential for getting to some kind of interim deal. But by the end of the day, Gaza is conquered by Israel. Israel right now has no intention to withdraw from Gaza. And as long as this is the case, what kind of deal can it be there? Israel will stay in Gaza, even if there will be ceasefire, even if the war will be over, unless there will be a real international force which will enforce Israel to withdraw from Gaza. Don't forget that the majority of Israelis, the big majority of Israelis, including the so-called peace camp and left wings, they all support continuing this war. Don't forget that most of the Israelis, if not all of them, think that what Israel is doing in Gaza is totally legitimate and justified. In this atmosphere, don't expect too much from Israel. It must come from the international community.
Chris, we spoke earlier about the calculations of the Biden administration, and I wanted to know more about the broader picture in the U.S. Is there how much of an opposition that we have in the U.S. to the war in Gaza?
I think the opposition is pretty significant, not among the ruling political class, although even there you're beginning to see cracks in the House of Representatives. But on the streets, people are appalled. The demonstrations we're talking 6 months now, and they haven't stopped. Not only have they not stopped, but they've not diminished in size. And of course, we've had very dramatic protests, Aaron Bushnell. So among the base, and then of course, we've had the voting in the primaries where people have not voted for Biden. There's been a non-committal vote of some significance. I think in Michigan, they were trying to get 10,000 of these votes, and they got over 100. There was very tepid support for Biden to begin with. So it's not like he had much of a solid political base to build on, and that we have seen evaporating. And there have been all sorts of reports, including Obama visiting Biden at the White House with warnings that Biden is in serious, serious trouble. And I think that this is a way to appease the Israel lobby, i.e. all they care about really is that the United States keeps providing weapons material, war material to sustain the genocide. That's the issue. And then deal with this very restive and disenchanted public, especially among young voters, but also among the Arab American community, sizable community in Michigan, in New Jersey. And they're not going to vote for Biden. And Biden, remember, if you look back at those states, the Trump won by just a single digit percentage point. So Biden is in serious trouble politically, not just because of his unwavering complicity or support for the genocide, but on a host of other issues, but taking it all together. Yes. Yeah, so I think this is what we're seeing is more of a campaign moment, an attempt to mollify a disenchanted base. I think that's what this is really about.
Diana, when you look at the wording of the resolution that talks about an immediate ceasefire during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, we are halfway through. Would the resolution become completely irrelevant, let's say, in a week from now if we don't have any agreement?
Absolutely. The fact that it's only being called for during the month of Ramadan is also laughable. You know, we have expert after expert who said that it's probably going to take more than a year just to clear out the rubble. It's going to take such a long time just to get the much needed aid into the northern part of the Gaza Strip, much less than treat the people who are still who are wounded, and to collect those people who are under the rubble. So the idea that this is short term is cruel. And instead, they should be focusing on absolutely stopping Israel. And again, you know, Chris said something that was very important. He said, usually you get these UN resolutions at the beginning, not 6 months in. But the fact that they've waited for such a long time for Israel to carry out such a brutal attack and carry out genocide shows just how complicit the United States is in this genocide.
Mm-hmm. Gideon, I've been listening to you basically saying that you don't expect any major impact of this resolution on the Israelis domestically. Now, there have been those saying that basically Netanyahu's biggest concern has been his own personal political survival. His opponents in Israel, do they see this as one of those rare moments that could help them put more pressure on him, or at least push for this war cabinet to disintegrate?
I must remind you that also his opponents are in favor of continuing the war. Mm-hmm. None of them made a call to stop the war at once. So it's not like we have an opposition to the war in Israel. We have an opposition to Netanyahu in Israel, and that's a big difference. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not one moment which will make the change. It is a process. No doubt that the American policy, if it will be continued and followed by measures, will weaken Netanyahu.
Chris, briefly, if you don't mind, if Biden doesn't get re-elected, are we likely to see any change when it comes to the war in Gaza?
No, it won't make any difference for Palestinians. Let's remember, Bibi Netanyahu prefers Trump over Biden, and that's one of the final ironies. He doesn't care if Biden and the Democrats disintegrate. There's deep animosities between Biden and Netanyahu, goes back to the Iran deal when the Republicans invited Netanyahu to attempt to sabotage the Iran deal by speaking directly to Congress. So, no, it's a win-win for Netanyahu if Bibi continues in power. And Gideon's very right, of course. It doesn't matter if he's replaced or not, vis-a-vis Gaza and the West Bank and maybe Lebanon. No, Trump, they prefer Trump. So if this is politically damaging to Biden, the Israeli government under Netanyahu doesn't care.
Thank you. I really appreciate your insight. Diana Bhutto, Gideon Levy, Chris Hedges, thank you very much indeed. This episode was produced by Dermot Fleming, Umm Kulsoom Sharif, Iman Hamdan, and Jim Gilchrist. Studio sound was by Deepak Pushkaran. The program was edited by George Florakapis, Zainab Adar, and Jody Frias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. Tune in on Wednesday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, what will Friday's attacks in Russia mean for Vladimir Putin, a president who has promised his country's security? That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.